Good evening. If you'd open your Bible that was read moments ago to Romans 8:28, I titled the lesson, Will God Watch Over Me? Tonight we're going to read more than anything because if you're not familiar with some of the reading, it's going to refamiliarize yourself with it, or maybe for the first time. But I want you to get a message. I want you to see a point why we're going through this. Paul makes a conclusion in Romans 8 showing how God is working for us. That everything in heaven is working for your salvation. And we possess that now. We saw that this morning talking about the covenant. But sometimes getting from where we are today to where God wants us to be out here, there are going to be a lot of difficulties, a lot of trials, a lot of disappointments, and we need to see what God's doing. And so that's where I asked the question, will God watch over me? Because when you're going through a massive trial or when you're going through a difficulty, well, you start wondering, don't you? And he says in Romans 8:28, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. We live in a world dominated by the devil. And the devil has one desire, and that's to bring anything that belongs to God under His power. God wants to, or the devil wants to make absolutely certain he can destroy anything that belongs to Jesus. And so because we live in that kind of world, and because that the world is filled with evil and with sin, the devil is behind this push trying to destroy. And here Paul states, we know God causes. God causes. You got this evil that's out there trying to destroy and do the powers that it can. But then behind all of it, for the saint, for the ones of us in Jesus, for the ones under that covenant, he says, God causes. I want you to gain some assurance, Paul says. We know. Paul was convinced. He knew what God was doing. He said, we know God causes all things. It doesn't matter if the devil intends it to destroy you. It doesn't matter if you lose your job. It doesn't matter if this country is going down. It doesn't matter. God causes all things to work together for good. Now, I know we read that a lot of times. I know a lot of times it's hard to believe it. But you know what God can do? He can take the harm and evil of people and use it for your good. And it's qualified with two things. He says, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God. Lovers of God keep His commandments. Lovers of God listen to the voice of God. If you're a lover of God, you know what you can rest assured of? God's going to cause it to work for good. Whatever you're going through, it will be for your good. And then He says, to those who are called according to His purpose. I'm calling. I want you to fulfill my purpose. And my purpose is to follow my commandments. And if that's your purpose, then you can understand you love God, you're called according to His purpose, and He will cause all things for good. That is an assurance. Well, now knowing that, come back if you would to Genesis 37. Genesis chapter 37. We're going to read about a fellow by the name of Joseph. Joseph was the last of children to Jacob. But I want you to notice, and this is what is amazing to me in families. I see it often, I hear about it often when you do funerals and you're around people. I can't understand how families can turn on themselves. It just makes no sense. Unless you're not purposing after the things of God. In Genesis 37 verse 4, he said, his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all of his brothers, and so they hated him and could not speak to him on friendly terms. Right there. See, family members can't speak on friendly terms. That's what sin does. Here's Joseph catching the blunt of their brothers. And you know what he did? He was just loved by his father. That's all it was. Joseph had done nothing to his brothers. Joseph was loved by his father. His father made him this tunic, and on this tunic that he gave him, this many-colored tunic, and they hated him. And now you're going to see why the Lord wants to keep hatred out of your life because of where it leads and what it'll do. Look down at verse 18. Jacob sends his youngest son, Joseph. He's 17 years old. He sends him to go find his brothers. They're pasturing the animals away. And he said, I want you to go see how it is with your brothers, and I want you to go see how it is with our flock, and you come back and report to me. So here's this 17-year-old Joseph. He takes off. Verse 18. When they saw him from a distance and before he came close to them, they plotted against him to put him to death. Look where hatred drives a person. They said to one another, here comes this dreamer. See, he had interpreted some dreams for them. Verse 20. Now then, come and let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits, and we will say, a wild beast devoured him. Then let us see what will become of his dreams. But Reuben, he's the eldest. Excuse me. But Reuben heard this and rescued him out of their hands and said, let us not take his life. Reuben further said to them, shed no blood. Throw him into this pit that is in the wilderness, but do not lay hands on him, that he might rescue him out of their hands to restore him to his father. So it came about when Joseph reached his brothers, they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the very colored tunic that was on him. And they took him and they threw him into the pit. Now the pit was empty, without any water in it. Then they sat down to eat a meal, and as they raised their eyes and looked, behold, a caravan of Ishmaelites were coming from Gilead with their camels bearing aromatic gum and balm and myrrh on their way, bringing them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it for us to kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him, for he is our brother, our own flesh. And his brothers listened to him. And some of the Midianite traders passed by, so they pulled him up and lifted Joseph out of the pit and sold him into the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. Thus they brought Joseph into Egypt. He is our brother. Noble thought. He is our brother. We just want to kill him. But by the way, let's don't kill him. He is our brother. I mean, you can almost see the snideness. They don't have any clue what they're doing. But you know, I want you to see hate at its height. Let's make some money. Let's get rid of him. And here is an evil plot to harm Joseph. We know God causes all things to work together for good to those who love him, to those who are called according to his purpose. They plot evil. Look at verse 29. Now Reuben returned to the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit, so he tore his garments. He returned to his brothers and said, the boy is not there. As for me, where am I to go? So they took Joseph's tunic and slaughtered a male goat, dipped the tunic in the blood, and sent the varied-colored tunic and brought it to their father and said, we found this. Please examine it to see whether it is your son's tunic or not. Then he examined it and said, "It is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." So Jacob tore his clothes and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. Then all of his sons and all of his daughters arose to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, "Surely I will go down to Sheol in mourning for my son." So his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold him into Egypt to Potiphar, Pharaoh's officer, the captain of the bodyguard. You know, there's so much. But I cannot even imagine, how can you let your father believe the tragedy of his own son? And here all his brothers are standing there, and they know good and well he's not dead. They don't love their father. They don't love their brother. Hatred has gotten in, and it's at its height. And they're going to destroy not only their brother, but they destroy the heart of the father. They don't care about anybody. Now here's the amazing part. I said a while ago, Joseph's 17 years old. Can you imagine being sold, 17 years old, and you're being traded to some Ishmaelites, and now you're being taken away, and you come into Egypt, and they sell you to this man named Potiphar. He's here. He is as a captain, a bodyguard of Pharaoh's army. 17 years old, and he's taken almost 500 miles away from his home. What's going to become of me? There's no one to turn to. What great injustice has been done to this boy? Well, look at chapter 39, if you'll come on over with me, please. We pick it back up again. In chapter 39, verse 1 and 2, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. The Lord's with him. Does it look like the Lord's with you when you're being taken captive? Looks like the Lord's with you when you're being thrown into a pit and turned on by your brothers? Apparently Joseph knew something. There was a love there. And the Lord ends up and he becomes a successful man. A 17-year-old boy. And he's becoming successful. Look at verse 3. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. What did the Lord cause? All things to work together for good? And it was not something that Joseph was saying. Joseph wasn't walking around, "Praise the Lord, oh me." There was something about his life that was real and solid. And Joseph, Potiphar could see, this man is different than any other man. And every time he did something, there was this prospering from the Lord. Boy, it was uniquely different than anything else he'd seen in Egypt. Look at verse 4. So Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant. And he made him overseer over his house and all that he owned and put him in his charge. It came about from that time he made him oversee the house and over all that he owned. The Lord blessed the Egyptian house on the account of Joseph. Thus the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. So he left everything he owned in Joseph's charge. And with him he did not concern himself with anything except the food which he ate. I mean, a foreigner. And you let him run free. Slaves don't get to run free in masters' houses. Joseph does. Everything is working for the good. And you know what Potiphar recognizes? Our house is being blessed because of the presence of this man. Let me tell you something. One righteous person can bless a home. Can keep things from going down. Will God watch over us? Well, here's Joseph been taken as a 17-year-old boy. And he's thrown down to this point, and now he's in Potiphar's house, and he's been made in charge of everything, put him in charge over everybody else. And Potiphar didn't even concern himself. Well, look at verse 7. It came about after these events that his master's wife looked with desire at Joseph. And she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold with me here. My master does not concern himself with anything in the house, and he has put all things that he owns in my charge. There is no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God?" Notice his attitude. How can I sin against God? That's the kind of man we know Joseph is. You know why we know Joseph loved God? Because Joseph was concerned about what is right. It is wrong to have another man's wife. It is wrong for any kind of immorality. And here he had the perfect opportunity set up. Our day in society, people would be saying, "Hey, nothing wrong with it. I mean, you know, it was presented there. It's wrong in the eyes of God." Joseph knew it. Joseph told him, "It's wrong in the eyes of God, and I'm not about to violate anything God has given or taught." Verse 10. And she spoke to Joseph day after day. He did not listen to her to lie beside her or be with her. Now, how many people would give in to temptation? You've got to love the Lord your God with all your heart. That's why he didn't give in. Verse 11. Now it happened one day that he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the household was there inside. She caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and went outside. When she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled outside, she called to the men of her household and said to them, "See, he has brought a Hebrew to us to make sport of us. He came into me to lie with me, and I screamed. When he heard that I raised my voice and screamed, he left his garment beside me and fled and went outside." So she left his garment beside her until her master came home. Then she spoke to him with these words, "The Hebrew slave whom you brought to us came into me to make sport of me, and as I raised my voice and screamed, he left his garment beside me and fled outside." Now, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spoke to him, saying, "This is what your slave did to me," his anger burned. She lied. He's innocent. And how are you as a foreigner going to prove you're innocent? How are you going to prove when the other slaves have been drawn into this scheme? They didn't know. They're just taking her word for it. And now Potiphar's angry. You see, they intend to harm Joseph again. Well, verse 20. So Joseph's master took him and put him into jail, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in the jail. But the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. The chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners who were in the jail, so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for it. The chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper. Can you imagine? You're not just in a jail, a prison. You're in the king's prison. You know who's in the king's prison? All the people who committed hideous crimes and awaiting death. That's the prison Joseph's in. And yet, even though evil was done at him, what was God? Will God watch over me? Okay, in that position, I'm going to cause favor again. And now here you find yourself in charge of all the prisoners. And you're not even considered as one of them, according to the chief jailer. And you are still by Potiphar and Pharaoh. And so here he is. And God's causing everything to prosper. God's behind it. But that's not all. Look at chapter 40. Look at verse 1. And it came about after these things, the cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was furious with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. So he put them in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard in the jail, the same place where Joseph was in prison. The captain of the bodyguard put Joseph in charge of them, and he took care of them, and they were in confinement for some time. Then the cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt, who were confined in jail, both had a dream the same night, each man with his own dream and each dream with its own interpretation. When Joseph came to them in the morning and observed them, behold, they were dejected. He asked Pharaoh's officials who were with him in the confinement in his master's house, "Why are your faces so sad today?" Then they said to him, "We have had a dream, and there's no one to interpret it." Then Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me, please." Notice what Joseph's always governed by. God. God's always first in his thinking, always first in his mind. I wonder why God's watching over him, even in these dire circumstances. Verse 9. So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him, "In my dream, behold, there was a vine in front of me, and on the vine there were three branches. And as it was budding, its blossoms came out, and its clusters produced ripe grapes. Now, Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, so I took the grapes and squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I put the cup in Pharaoh's hand." Then Joseph said to him, "This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you will be put in Pharaoh's cup into his hand according to your former custom when you were a cupbearer. Only keep me in mind when it goes well with you, and please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. For I was in fact kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing that they should have put me into the dungeon. He makes a simple request. He knows you're going to be restored at the side of Pharaoh. "Remember me, would you? I'm here unjustly." That's all he says. That's all we have recorded, he says. He's not saying, "Poor me." He's not saying, "Oh, I got to get out of here. This is just so bad. And, you know, I mean, I was kidnapped. This whole story and this old pouty, bad attitude." It wasn't there. "Just remember me." Well, let's keep going. 22. Let's move down, if you would, please. Well, I'll tell you, we'll take the time. Look at verse 16. We'll look there. When the chief baker saw that he interpreted favorably, he said to Joseph, "I also saw in my dreams, and behold, there were 3 baskets of white bread on my head. And in the top basket, there were some of all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh." Excuse me. "And the birds were eating them out of the basket of my head." Then Joseph answered and said, "This is the interpretation. The 3 baskets are 3 days. Within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and will hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh off you." Boy, how'd you like to hear that interpretation? You know, verse 20. "Thus it came about on the 3rd day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all of his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his office, and he put a cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, just as Joseph had interpreted them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him." Huh. Will people disappoint you? Yeah. But you have to love the Lord. You have to love the Lord. 41. Look at verse 1. Well, let's move down. Let's come down. Pharaoh ends up having a dream, and no one can interpret it. And the cupbearer remembers. Now, I want you to know this. 2 years longer he waits in prison. Things don't work out for good instantly. Sometimes it takes time. 2 more years pass and he's down in the dungeon with the rest of the criminals. Now look at 41:16. Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, "It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer." I mean, notice, it's God. It's about God. It's doing God and what's right with God. Come on down to verse 39. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has informed you all of this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people shall do homage. Only in the throne I will be greater than you." Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his hand. He put it on Joseph's hand and clothed him in garments of fine linen and put gold necklace around his neck. And he had him ride in his second chariot, and they proclaimed him before, "Bow the knee." And he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Though I'm Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in the land of Egypt." Joseph's 30 years old. From 17 years to 30 years old, 13 years have passed, and Joseph has experienced so much heartache. Joseph has experienced so much disappointment. He's experienced lies and everything. But God causes to those who love Him everything to work for good. And now, 13 years later, he is number two in charge of all of Egypt. Look down at verse 51. Joseph had 2 children. Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh, for he said, "God has made me forget all of my trouble and all of my father's household." He named his second Ephraim, for he said, "God has made me fruitful in the land of my afflictions." Notice how he names his children. They're named after things of God. Manasseh, Ephraim, 2 of the greatest of the 12 tribes of Israel. And he's thinking always in terms of God. And from this point forward, do you know that at least it's taken 20 years, because there's going to come a 7-year famine. 20 years Joseph has been in dire straits. He's had to fight. He's had to go down the tubes. He's had to endure many trials and many tribulations you and I will never touch. At least 20 years. And not one time do we find Joseph complaining about the injustices. Nowhere do we find Joseph feeling sorry for himself and sulking that everything is so bad and so poor. Nowhere do we find Joseph speaking openly to anybody that would listen. "Let me tell you my sorrows. Let me tell you my troubles. Let me tell you how bad I've had my life. Let me tell you about injustices. You want to talk about injustices? I've never been treated fairly. It started in my own family." And he never did that. He did everything trusting his God. And everything that happened, even in the worst moments, it was still about God, all the way to the day that his sons were born. And it's still about God. And now, during this period of 7 years, Joseph's father and brothers get to come to him. I want the end of it. Come to chapter 50. Genesis chapter 50. Look at verse 15. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "What if Joseph bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong which we did to him?" Yeah, you're worried now because you think Joseph's like you. They hated him. Now what if Joseph hates us? See, they're speaking from their own nature, thinking Joseph's like them. We'll continue on. Verse 16. So they sent a message to Joseph saying, "Your father charged before he died, saying, 'Thus you shall say to Joseph, please forgive, I beg you, the transgression of your brothers and their sin, for they did you wrong. And now please forgive the transgression of the servant of the God of your father.' And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also came and fell down before him and said, 'Behold, we are your servants.'" Now notice verse 19. "But Joseph said to them, 'Do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive. So therefore do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones.' So he comforted them and spoke kindly to them." How did they speak to Joseph? When he was 17, they couldn't even speak on friendly terms with him. After all the treatment, how does he speak to them? Kindly. You see, Joseph was according to God's purpose. And a purposed person of God takes on the characteristics of God. And they love God. And they know that when they encounter various trials, James chapter 1, they consider it all joy. Because they know their faith is going to be helped through it. It hurts. It's disappointing. There's pain. But God causes it all to work together for good. I don't see it now, and I don't see how it could work. A very godly woman I met in Sioux City, Iowa, very devout to the Lord. Her husband was not so. And she prayed for him daily. He gave her agony. One day, a drunk driver hit her car and killed her 4-year-old. You know, that's a sad thing. That's a tragedy. You know what she told me? "I know God causes all things to work together for good." That was what she told me. She said, "You know what this tragedy did? My husband repented and came to his senses and is now walking with the Lord." Yes, God caused it to work together for good. I lost my little girl, but I know where she is. And now I've gained a husband in the Lord Jesus. When are we going to learn? When are we going to learn that though you go through tough times, when are we going to stop focusing on the tough times? And when are we going to take Romans 8:28 and circle that on the tablet of our heart, knowing there's a promise given to every one of us that if we love Him and if we're purposed with Him, no matter what I have to face, no matter how difficult it may be, no matter what the cost, God promises, "I will cause it for your good." trust me. And it might not happen in a month, and it might not happen in 6 months. It might be like a Joseph for 20 years that it took. But it took Joseph in all of that time. He never wavered in his faith and trust and love for the Lord. And every time he found himself in a dire situation, somehow, some way, God rescued him and God established him and God put him up there and God helped him and God stood with him. And he knew that. And he didn't complain. And he didn't say, poor me. Trusted his God. And even though someone may mean it for evil, God means it for good. For evil will never trump God's purpose. Ever. And God will be glorified. And you will prevail. And that's the promise that you and I can rest assured of. You think about that. We got some growing to do. But that's a promise. Will God watch over me? Only one way to answer that question. Do I love God? Am I purposed what He has called me to? That's the way to answer that one. And if that's the case, then I will put God first and foremost, and I'll make the responses that He wants me to make. And God will cause all things to work for your good. Learn from Joseph.